Okay, you're very welcome back to the programme. Thanks to all of you for texting in your comments. I do appreciate your time and effort. We'll be getting to those as this hour wears on. This came in from an anonymous listener, and it reads as follows. My ex-husband was a sports professional in Dublin. They mix in a very false world of people with money or pretending to have money, lavish eating out and trips away, people constantly trying to get them to in on deals. There is a serious pressure to try to stay level with these people with their flashy cars, houses, clothes, etc. My husband ran up huge debts and lost our house, me and his daughters. A lot of other things happened as well. They're under serious pressure when they're not earning the same. Nothing excuses pretending to have cancer. I've had it myself and lost family members to it, but something needs to be addressed sports professionals' pressures and mental health. Okay. Right, Letterkenny Primary Schools, the parents are coming together to encourage parents to talk about the use of smartphones. The Parents Committee from Letterkenny Schools have organised a talk by Aisling O'Connor, who will explain the dangers in allowing young children on smartphones, smart technology, to young. Lauren Sweeney or Swiney is parent where? What is it?
Sweeney.
Okay, it's S-W-I-N-E-Y?
That's right,
lovely.
Yeah.
Parent from Letterkenny Educate Together National School. Thanks, Lauren, for calling in. Appreciate your time. Nicola Anderson is a parent from Woodland School. Good morning, Nicola.
Good morning, Greg.
And Maura McManus, Deputy Principal of Letterkenny Educate Together at National School. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg.
So talk to me a little bit about the concerns, Maura, you would have, I suppose, as a Deputy Principal in terms of young people's access to, you know, smart technology, arguably too soon. That's what we're having this conversation about.
Yeah. As a primary school teacher and a leader of the primary school in Educate Together, we feel that there is a space for learning about skills and technology. There are a lot of skills that children need for the future workforce. For example, presentation skills, skills of synthesizing and that sort of thing around technology. But like you said, it's the use of or the inappropriate use of some of the smart apps that children are using outside of school that we would have concerns about.
Like, and the reality is, you know, technology, these kids are born into the technology, right?
They are,
so
yes.
It's there. That's the part of it. But the toxic parts of it, the social media that sort of maybe puts pressure on you to act or look or behave a certain way. For some people, they're under pressure to conform to that. For others, they feel, well, I can never conform to that. And the messaging. You know, the messaging, everyone has maybe difficulties with other students at schools. Back in the day when you went home, there was a respite from that. Now it's ever present. But also the devices are so present,
yes,
that you're also almost compounding the anxiety of a young person by saying you can't have access to one.
Yeah, and that's where there's a fine line, Greg. We don't want to say we're anti-technology. We are anti-scrolling. We are talking about the amount of time children use scrolling or in social groups and talking with the conversing with their friends. It's that kind of usage that we have concerns about and that we feel it's really impacting their mental health. It's also impacting their physical health. It's impacting their ability to attend during school time, because the research says that once a child has a smartphone, and this is where I suppose I started getting interested in the topic, when a child gets a smartphone and you're sitting at the dinner table and you're asking them, how was your day? And if they have access to a smartphone and they are engaging in WhatsApp groups or Snapchat groups with their friends, they're only superficially answering you, because what's happening within themselves, they're wondering, I wonder what Greg said there about the school today. They're not 100% present. And therefore, if they're not 100% present when they're talking to you, then when they're going to bed at night, they're not 100% getting that good sleep. And then it's impacting their attention during school, their ability to attain.
And I'd have question marks too on the breakdown of the space in which they are actually living online or living in the reality. Lauren Sweeney, I mean, as a parent, it's so blooming challenging, isn't it?
It's really challenging. And I think that's one of the key things that we want to highlight in having this event, is that I know that parents are feeling really trapped. You know, they're feeling like, on the one hand, they have a lot of discomfort around giving their kids a smartphone. But on the other hand, they don't want their kids to feel left out. And I think that's the trap that a lot of parents find themselves in. And because we know the problems that our kids are facing, we know that these apps and these phones are designed to hook our kids and keep them scrolling. And we know the longer they scroll, the more money these companies make. And we also know that these aren't just phones, they're pocket computers. So the whole world is available to them on there. And our parental apps, control apps are not working. And we also know that it's taking a massive mental health toll. So I think the key message we want to get out is that there is a solution to this. We don't have to be stuck in this trap. And the solution is to take collective action as parents, to come together and decide for ourselves what kind of childhood we want our kids to have. If we come together to do this, we can reset these norms that people have kind of internalized, that it's normal to give a smartphone at a certain point. We can reset those if we come together. And this is happening all over Europe. It's happening all over the world. We've reached a tipping point. And we want to make sure by hosting
this
event...
I'm not really quite sure we're on that precipice. I believe we have.
We're certainly a lot closer to it than we were. All over Ireland, if you check out smartphonefree.ie or smartphonechildhood.org, you can see that there are groups all over Europe who are pushing. This is from the bottom up. At the same time, there's regulatory pressure. I believe we will get there. And the worst thing we can do is give up and just say, oh, we can't win this battle.
So what does that future look like then? What with the upward pressure, the downward pressure, where's the middle? What becomes the norm and what is best for children?
I think this is the matter that's up for debate. From the top down, we can see that regulation is coalescing around this idea of somewhere around the 14 to 16 bracket, having controls in that area. And then from the bottom up, we're finding that parents are having to educate themselves. And what that looks like from the bottom up is parents coming together to sign these parent pacts. And I think that's what's making the real difference. They come together, they sign, they can see how many people in their friend group, their sports group, their class group have signed these pacts, and they're having a real impact. Okay. When your kid comes to you and says everyone has one, you can say, no, they don't. Yeah. 75% of parents in your class have signed this agreement.
So in other words, it doesn't have to have 100% signed.
No, absolutely not. Okay. Absolutely not.
Nicola, what do these Go Phone Free codes actually look like then in practice? I know there's some forms out in schools in this county. I'm not sure what kind of feedback people have had on them. Maybe we can get to that. But what does it look like to you, Nicola?
So I suppose what I'm coming at it from is our eldest daughter is now at the age where she's coming nine. We're at Woodlands National School, so you know we have the sacraments or big years in the Catholic schools, and with the communion, it was all around, you know, the event itself, and then the aftermath of that was, you know, the comparisons of like what did you get, and some of the conversations that came up around our parents' groups were the pressure then mounts towards the confirmation in the final year of school, and it nearly has become a transactional confirmation equals the smartphone and the giving of the smartphone. And that...
And what age is that? That's really about 12,
that's around the 12 mark. We could have anything from 11.
Yeah,
11 through to 12 and a half.
But the 11-year-olds are caught up with the 12-year-olds, even if they happen to
absolutely
be younger anyway.
Absolutely. And, you know, as a parent of three, too, I see myself, you know, where it was, I wouldn't have dreamt of, you know, taking my 4-year-old first child out with without having, you know, kind of strict controls about where we're going and a plan. The third child is kind of caught up in a lesser, restricted kind of parenting from my point of view, because we've been through it before. And that's what happens, I think, within families, is the first child, we approach it in a more cautious manner. And by the time we get into the second and the third child, we feel a bit more confident. But also there's the pressure of, I'm the only one in the house that doesn't have this. So there's a few different things at play there. But I think what struck a chord with me was one parent said to me that they resisted the pressure at a confirmation to give the smartphone, and it bought them that summer, and that's how they described it. They bought the child the summer without the pressure of social media, or even just the groups on WhatsApp and those pressures that come with that.
Yeah, Maura, the thing is like, I don't think anyone listening to this program believes that it's better for a 9, 10 or 11 year old to have unfettered access to social media, right?
Yep.
But we do warnings like this all the time, or conversations, but we seem to, as parents, guardians, choose the path of least resistance. Give them the phone.
I would slightly agree with you and disagree at the same time. I think technology is evolving, and what apps that children were using 2-3 years ago are becoming archaic. So, you know, there's this situation that we're not educating ourselves enough. And, you know, what we thought, you know, I'm still in the WhatsApp era, but now children are using far more sophisticated apps, and they're hiding them on their parents. So we're handing these phones thinking that they're using the technology similar to the way I'm using it, but they're not. They're way more advanced.
That's what I'm saying is that we don't want, we know it's not the right thing to do, but we do do it, and we're forgoing arguably our responsibility to protect them by choosing the path of less resistance and saying, okay, there, you can have it. Stop looking at my phone. And eventually we go, right, okay, then.
So it's about education, and that's why we're asking people to come along to the talk about with Aisling O'Connor.
Sorry, did you want to come back in there, Nicola?
Yeah, I think the analogy I would use to that is, you know, when our kids start to get that little bit of independence, and they want to walk to meet their friends, to walk to school or to walk to the shop, we would never just open the door and let them go and say, sure, no problem. But I think by handing over the smartphone and not having some kind of stepping stones into the world of smartphone and use of the internet, we are effectively doing that. We're letting the child go out into this world.
Well, when I was trying to explain it to my eldest son, I was like, you know, you wouldn't want me to drive you to the biggest shopping centre in this country as a 9 or 10 year old and let you in and say, engage with whomever you like, sit and have long conversations with older adults. You just simply, it's unimaginable that you might do that. But in reality, Lauren, that is kind of what the space is. Roblox, for example, is not just on mobile devices, it's on consoles as well.
That's
a hunting ground for paedophiles.
It absolutely is. And I don't think that parents are aware of what they are opening their kids up to. And I think you hit on a really good point there, Greg, which is that at the same time as we've been losing control of our kids in the virtual space, we've been over-controlling them in the real world. So it's not just that our kids are spending too much time online, is that they're losing the chance to have these really formative experiences in the real world. They need to actually take risks, not the kind of risks we're exposing them to online, but in real life, to get out there, to have their independence and to interact with other people. They need to be treated as kind of anti-fragile beings who need to learn social skills, and they're not going to learn them on their phones.
That's about empowering parents.
Yeah, the thing that annoys me as well is too that our kids are a product, like say for instance TikTok. It will target children specifically for views. So if that child expresses any questions about their mental health, for an example, they will be targeted in relation to that. If they have any queries searching anywhere on their device about their gender, they will be exposed information along those lines. And they are a product to these multinational companies.
And Greg, the difficulty here is that when you do buy a smartphone for your child and they start on TikTok, it all starts lovely. They're learning the TikTok dances, they're doing the tutorials, they're learning the super kicks. It's when you start thinking that trust is there with the child and you think, right, okay, they've got this, they're not on anything sinister. Next thing, boom, they've had an argument with their parent, and the algorithm, they'll just look for an extra 3 seconds on a roll or whatever it's called, a video clip about, not getting on with my parent. And then instantly their FYP page on TikTok is all about negative relationships with your parents.
Also, I had a conversation with a family friend whose daughter was on TikTok. I won't say the age or anything along those lines, but there was one video whereby you could argue that the clothing or the dance was inappropriate for the child's age, if I could put it like that there. It was saved 250 times. You know, there's a little save thing. No likes, like 5 likes or something along those lines. And I said to the parent, I says, well, who do you think saving that? Who do you think saving that, and why are they saving it? Do they think it's because your daughter's a great dancer? You know what I mean? And no one would want to put our, and it happens to boys as well, by the way, no one would want to put our, have a look, if you're on TikTok, have a look at the saves. And you ask yourself, who's saving this stuff, and to what
tells
end?
An awful picture.
That ends up on a website in Eastern European as content. Anywhere.
It's out there, and once it's out there, you can't get
so
it.
So your
back.
Innocent child's video is reframed as effectively pornography to a different market.
And Greg,
look at your
list
saves on your videos. Look at your saves on your kids' videos and see if you see a pattern as to which videos are
there
being saved.
There are alternatives here to allow our kids to feel connected. There are alternatives. There's a thing called a balance phone, which allows kids to have what looks and feels like a smartphone and allows them some degree of connectivity.
So that might be for the helicopter parents.
Yes, for some people who feel like they want to have that connectivity.
Or the parent, that's the working parent that really needs to know, did their child get home from school today? And they really want to connect and find out, you know, did Greg get home from school today? I need to contact them. So a balance phone or the brick, the Nokia brick, they're all options.
Nicola, we can use sort of ignorance to defence to some extent, right? Because, you know, the technology is advancing now.
It is,
now. I mean,
absolutely.
Like, your kids are chatting with AI now, and I'll tell you that AI can take them down a very dodgy path as well, because it's a it is the Wild West in terms, again, of mental health or other questions that a inquiring young mind might have. And it's on every Android phone, by the way. Gemini's on every Android phone, and they can engage with it. But anyway, so how do we make sure that we have all the info, Nicola, that we, you know, there's events coming up, and we're talking about event now, whereby you can have all the info, and then you can't lean on ignorance as a defence, right?
So there's part of me thinks we can never have all the info around this. It's moving too fast, and, you know, I think it's unfair to expect parents to be at the cusp of it all the time. But what I do think is back to that same analogy of opening the door, we need to just build the boundaries in and to give our children enough confidence to be able to navigate these spaces. And we need to do that at the appropriate age. Whenever children are 8, 9, 10 years of age, they cannot regulate that for themselves. So we need to be, like anything else, like the TV, like any other kind of the sweets or the treats, we have to do that regulation. And once we hand over the smartphone without any, you know, kind of controls over that, we're not doing that. And I think that's the big message for me.
Do you know what I and this is no criticism of anyone, and I'll come to our other two guests to talk about this event more as well. Do you ever see when there's someone puts a Facebook a post up about a suspicious approach of a child? Do you know what I mean? It was a white van, and they says get into the van, and everyone goes nuts. It shared 1,000 times.
Absolutely.
You'd swear the sky was about to fall in. How often is that happening every single day on the internet? And we kind of either don't know, or we pretend it's not happening, or don't think something could come from it.
For me, this is about,
it's that when something's real there, right?
Yes.
Yet the danger, firstly, often that someone's looking for directions, it never happens, but you have to be careful, right? But we are completely oblivious to this happening on such a scale online.
Yes.
Every day.
Yeah, and I think actually, Greg, there is that kind of danger online, but I think actually the real danger is closer to the stuff you were talking about, the content that our kids are being fed. It's much easier for us to be scared about the white man, the white van man, but what our kids are being fed, and they don't even have to click on it, by the way. There's a lot of experiments now of people starting Instagram accounts as 13-year-olds, and they're not even having a fight with their parents and clicking on anything. They're clicking on only kittens for 2 weeks. Within about 3 weeks, they're being fed a diet of self-harm, and I can barely stand to watch these reels myself.
No, I know that.
Within
know
a couple
that.
Of minutes, and you think about a vulnerable 13-year-old.
I'm not being argumentative or disruptive, because we're all on the same page here, right? But I'm very concerned of the amount of men that are caught by these vigilante gangs. Every single day, there's hundreds of these websites and hundreds of these people that engage with the kids initially on these social media platforms, get them to send images, and then try and meet them. And
it's a real problem.
The white van man in inverted commas. Because if they're catching that many people, that there's three or four videos a day, how many are going on court?
You know?
But you're also right what you're saying.
That's why we're so grateful for this space to talk about it, to educate parents, because parents were not reared. I wasn't reared in the in the technology era. So you just taught me about the saved on TikTok, the save aspect.
It's creepy. Have a look.
I think every day is a learning day for parents. And I too, myself as a parent, and I think it's important that we have this space to talk about it, and we continue to keep talking about it as parents. And it's our responsibility to keep educating ourselves.
We can. I don't think we can rely necessarily on governments or tech companies to... It's very easy to circumnavigate restrictions. That being said, when there was age verification brought in Britain, Pornhub saw a 70% drop in traffic. So it just goes to show it can be significant.
Yeah.
What I think is significant about what yous are doing, though, actually, is it's the support for parents and guardians, right?
Yeah.
Because, you know, we are there to support our kids individually. But it's very tough if you're a single parent, for an example, or whatever, to feel the strength to say, no, this is the right thing, and I've got other parents that are agreeing with me, and this is the policy more. I think that's actually really what's significant in what yous are doing today.
And I think we were very clear, the three of us here, we want to come on today that we want to, it's a non-judgmental, like parents are going to be listening today and they're saying, I have a phone. I have a phone already. What am I going to do? Yeah. Greg's just talked about all this sinister stuff. This is non-judgmental. We're here today to just educate, to inform people to come along and listen to the talk. They might consider, you know, withdrawing the phone and just giving them to, for an hour a day. You know, it'll, like as Nicola was saying, it'll look different in every family.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the main thing is that we don't want parents to feel like they're being judged.
But if they already, and I certainly wouldn't, but if they already had a phone, Lauren, you know, one of the things that annoyed my oldest boys too much, and I'm not saying they never got away with stuff, is I knew, right? So I knew stuff, if you know what I mean, because I was a young fella too once. Mm. And it made, they didn't think they could get away with stuff, right? And they knew I knew technology and they knew I understood mobile data versus the router. They knew I understand VPNs and it made them less likely then to sort of, because they didn't want to face my ire, so to speak.
Yeah. Yeah. Which, you know, nobody would want to.
Which is just a silent treatment or something, you know.
Yeah.
But so even if, my point is that even if your child has a smartphone, you can educate yourself so they know that, yeah. They know that you know that if they do something wrong, potentially you know what's
going on.
And
I know this. I'm the stepmother to a 24-year-old and I'm a mother to a 6-year-old. So I've been on this roundabout before. And we had to take that approach, which was, you know, at some point they are going to be introduced to the technology and you need to step into that space. It's the area of parenting you're playing your most important role. So don't shy away from it and don't shy away from talking about this with your parents' friends. That's really our main message.
Yeah.
And that's normalize talking about this. Your kid's going for a sleepover, ask about technology in the house. That is your right and it is your responsibility to do that. It's totally normal.
What's coming up on Thursday then at 7 p.m. in the Mount Errigal?
So we're having an event at the Mount Errigal at 7 p.m. It's a chance for parents to come together to talk about their concerns and their fears and to hear from Aisling O'Connor, who is a leading child psychologist in this area. She's going to be sharing what she sees and what she understands and how you can help yourself and your kids to navigate this. It's a really open event.
Yes.
Anybody can come along, kids of any age, whether you've given a smartphone yet or you haven't. And
so
it's
for
free
Milford, Carndonagh, Cadore, Gordonhawick, anywhere.
We've got schools on board we've got 10 different schools on board from the whole area. So we're really hoping to see as many parents as we can at this event.
Yeah, okay. And as I say, I think it's great for people to come together. It's hard to say no. Like I've seen, you know, and I've said this before, I hate to repeat myself, but I know how tough parenting is. And I've seen parents in certain areas wanting a teenage disco band because that was easier than saying no because all the other kids were going. You know, that sort of way. And it's a bit like this. Right. So I thought it interesting, actually, the one thing I learned about today is that you don't need 100% sign up for these sort of arrangements in schools. That actually, if you have a sort of a critical mass,
critical
I presume.
Mass. Yes, exactly.
That's
so
enough.
You don't feel alone. So a parent, if the child comes and says, "Mom, can I have a phone?" And you say, "Well, no." And they say, "Well, everyone else does." And then you can click online, no matter what school your child is in Donegal or any part of Ireland, you can click the school and click your child's class.
So
it's an
online pledge through smartphonefree.ie. It's really simple. You just pick your school, pick your class, sign the pledge online. It'll be updated every year and you can immediately then go and see the numbers. I know that in my kids' class we're already at about 60% of parents.
And it's first year then really what we're talking about. Is that is that where we're going to sit on first year in the tech?
We just had this discussion before we came in, Greg.
I don't think any fifth or sixth class, if you can avoid it or whatever.
Yeah.
But I think
that's
first year, it's a big step for them. The class has gone from 6 or 26 to, you know, 50.
100. I think the reality is that
there's wellness education in there.
Yeah, where your child is going to, you know, they're facing into a different environment. They're making that step into adolescence. They're, you know, that independence piece is really at the crux.
They're at that size where they could beat you down.
Yeah. That too.
But for a lot of parents, they still won't want to give a phone at that point. And it might be appropriate to give a flip phone. It might be appropriate to give a watch that has some
but
smart
I
aspects.
Think for me, the reason I ask that question is because in the reality of parenting, if I were resisting someone in fifth or sixth class, and I you know, that they could earn the right to the phone at first,
well, if, I don't or, think or that's something the right along approach. Those.
I don't know. No. I didn't have to go through it, but you know what? I don't know what
Greg,
it might be.
If you ask me, and you're a parent, and I would say, look, if you were to give your child a phone for the day, would they be able to self-regulate and come off it and not engage in apps that are not appropriate for their age? If the answer is yes to that question and they can come off the app independently and self-regulate within an hour, then yeah.
But I can't do that.
You can't yourself?
Self-regulate.
From the smart technology?
That's a challenge,
no,
I think.
No, of course
you know.
Okay.
And I think there's a lot
I would be,
that's
punish
your job
me
as
too.
Well.
No,
yeah.
It's not. It would punish me too much for me to sort of forego it. I'm just being honest.
Right? Gosh, I wouldn't want my child all day. You know,
no, neither would I. Yeah. Neither would I, right? And they're 22 and 18, so the oldest ones, I've no say in it really anymore. I don't know. I don't know what's right, what's wrong, but I think a lot of us as parents too are quite leaning on our phones.
I would be keen that, like, the you know, we're all navigating it all the time. It is changing. You know, by the time my youngest gets to the secondary school level, the world will look very different again. She's 3 now, so in 10 years' time, you know, what will this conversation be?
Yeah.
So, you know, I think we're very
the only thing that annoys me, that really does annoy me, is that I know for a fact the companies have the technology to actually screen this stuff, right?
Absolutely.
Also, to every phone can be set up with parental guidance that your child can't do anything on it, whether they're 14 or 8.
Yeah.
You can set an Android phone up as a child's phone and they cannot access it. You have the time, where they were at, what they accessed, everything. So I think a child shouldn't be afraid for their parents to see that. That would make you suspicious, wouldn't it, if they were? But the point I was going to make, I can't recall what it is now. But anyway, the event's on Thursday, November 6th at 7 p.m. Mount Errigal Hotel,
free.
Letterkenny.
Yes.
It's completely free. Yep. And that's bring your kids with you or parents?
It's not.
Oh,
it's a parents-only
event.
Parents-only event.
And it's just how do we navigate
point.
This?
It's important that we have children in the conversation at some point.
Yeah.
But it's good for parents to come along, educate themselves, and then the next step would be having a conversation with their own children.
Sorry, the point I was going to say is when it's advantageous to the companies, they can screen content, right? So say, for instance, Facebook. You will never see nudity on Facebook.
Yeah,
right?
They are able to do it.
But it, you have to circumnavigate it, and then it's taken down really quite quickly because it's policed that way. If you look at PlayStation, for example, they're very strict in certain parts of the world where you can't say any swear words or any bullying. It can flag all of that. So that tech is there.
You're completely right about that. They have that tech there,
but
we know why
it.
They're not using it is because this is the content that gets kids hooked and gets them scrolling. And so we can't wait around for them to be controlled.
And it's no coincidence that when you're playing FIFA, you have this random opening of packs, the betting industry loves that, right?
Yeah.
Playing Fortnite, you're opening boxes, you never know what's going to pop out. It is
specifically designed to capture their imagination.
Yeah, and it's grooming them into potentially gambling.
And
as
I
well,
think,
so.
You know, from a government point of view, I thought it was very interesting. I don't know if anyone heard Maureen O'Callaghan talking yesterday about the case she took against Facebook because of the AI stuff around face creams and stuff. And it hasn't, that content hasn't shown up.
They're useless
since she won the court case.
Right.
So it just goes to show how much that they can do whenever the law comes down, you know, not in their favour.
A TikTok Live will end immediately, automatically, if a nipple becomes visible.
Yeah.
Immediately. It can scan it that quickly that it instantly goes, yet everything else is fine.
Do you know, connected to that, Greg, not only can those companies do that if they wanted to, the people who run those companies, their kids don't have smartphones. Their kids actually go to fancy Waldorf schools where there's no technology at all because they know that the skills our kids actually need in this new digital world are not digital skills, to be honest. They're skills of communication and connection. So they're not letting their kids have these devices, and we can learn from that.
Okay,
that was getting back to my original point. We're not anti-tech.
No.
I want to be very clear about that, Greg.
Clever, they know exactly.
But
yeah,
we see these essential skills are decreasing.
Tech is all around us. Like, you know, you only have to see now potentially. Now, there's some brilliant kids out there, but you know, people leaving school, how well they can communicate or not, the level of resilience they have to go into the big bad world. It's all intertwined.
Yeah. And in a world of AI, it's the human skills and the human interaction that is more critical than the
critical thinking is a serious problem because already AI is doing a lot of the working out. Yeah.
Absolutely.
For people,
it can mine the information, it can regurgitate. Right. It's not that we need to teach our children, it's the thinking, the communication.
Yeah. Our world is full of language.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Lauren Sweeney, parent from Letterkenny Educate Together, deputy principal of Letterkenny Educate Together, Maura McManus, and Nicola Anderson from a parent of a child at Woodland School. All three of you, thank you very much indeed.
Thanks, Greg.
Right, so as I mentioned earlier, the parents of 826,000 children are to be asked to share with the Department of Education their views on the type of primary school they would like their child to attend. In what will be the largest ever national survey of its kind, the parents or guardians of all children from birth to 12 will be asked what school ethos they would prefer, religious or multi-denominational. Parents will also be asked for their preferences when it comes to single-sex or mixed educational provision, as well as whether they would like the language of instruction to be English or Irish. And it goes live at noon and will be open until the 16th of December. We have a couple of guests to discuss this. I'll say good morning first to David Graham, Communications Officer with Education Equality. David, good morning. Do you welcome this move by the state? It's huge.
Good morning, Greg. Yes, look, broadly speaking, yes, I certainly welcome the fact that this is happening. We've been campaigning on this issue for 10 years now, and unfortunately we've become sort of bitterly used to disappointment after disappointment, because there have been so many broken promises and so many delays and so on. So look, it's refreshing to see that a long promised initiative, I mean, this initiative goes back to September of 2023. It's been quite a long time coming, and it's refreshing to see this actually coming to fruition finally, though we would have a couple of sort of major concerns around it. Broadly speaking, the short answer is yes, we welcome the fact that it's going ahead.
The department says that the findings will inform future school planning and support more diverse school provision that reflects the values and needs of modern Ireland. Is that music to your ears?
No, I'm afraid not. It's just waffle, really, to be honest. I'm sorry to be so blunt, but it's really meaningless. I mean, that's the key question, is what actually happens with the result of this survey. And that statement from the department tells us precisely nothing whatsoever about what will actually happen with the data that is collected. And the fact is that the Minister for Education, as powerful as her position is, doesn't actually have the legal authority to change the patronage of any particular school. And the Education Act 1998 is quite clear on that point. So it really does remain to be seen what will actually happen.
But it could form part of a stronger argument into the future if the majority say they want religion out of schools, multi-denominational schools. It does give weight to the Department of Education in the future. Obviously, they've tried to, is it the phraseology, I think, remove Catholic patronage from a number of schools, some with very little success, so to speak. But if they go armed with this is what the people of Ireland want, this is what we intend doing, presumably strengthens their cause in that regard.
It does strengthen the moral argument. There's no question about that whatsoever. But how much sway will a moral argument hold in a negotiation behind the scenes with Catholic bishops? And we're talking in the main about Catholic bishops here. I mean, these are the landowners. These are people who have had an integral role in education for almost 200 years, and they're quite happy to see that position continue for another 200 years, as far as I can tell. So, yes, it certainly strengthens the department's hand. But, I mean, we already have a huge amount of data. We already have a very powerful human rights case. I mean, human rights law on this is very, very clear. Children have a human right to attend their local school without attending religious instruction. And this initiative does nothing whatsoever to address that. And then children also have a constitutional right to attend their local school without attending sacramental preparation and prayers and so on and so forth. And in practice, of course, that right is routinely ignored. Yes, this strengthens the hand of the department, but it's also equally likely that the results of this survey might just gather dust. So I would kind of um, I wouldn't be overly optimistic. I wouldn't be pessimistic either. We will have to see what happens. Really.
Why is it so important, though, that, you know, I mean, the majority of people in this country are Catholic. It's a Christian country. What's wrong with religion in schools?
Well, there's a lot to unpack in that. I mean, actually, if you look at the younger demographic, the picture is much more mixed in relation to religious affiliation. In fact, if you look at the marriage statistics, there are far more non-religious marriages now than there are Catholic marriages. Catholic marriages have fallen consistently in almost every year since the 1980s, and there are only 31% of marriages now, and that figure is falling. Meanwhile, there's over 40% of marriages are non-religious. The difficulty, anyway, to answer your question with integrating religion into the curriculum, into the core school day, is one, as I say, of human rights. It creates an in-group and an out-group. It creates exclusion and a feeling of othering and a sense of upset and sadness for children who aren't able to fully participate in the school day. So integrating religion into the core curriculum in a diverse and pluralistic society, which is what we've become, is fundamentally problematic. Education Equality believes that all religious faith formation, including religious worship and sacramental preparation, should be moved outside core school hours, not only for the benefit of children who are from non-Catholic or non-religious backgrounds, but also for teachers who similarly might not share the religious beliefs that they're contractually obliged to impart to their children.
Monsignor Kevin Gillespie is Diocesan Administrator of the Raphoe Diocese and very kindly joins us. Monsignor, what is your view on this survey? And I suppose it's not necessarily the survey in and of itself, it's what might come from that survey, for an example, which we don't fully know yet.
Thank you, Greg, for having me on. To a degree, I'm neutral about it. These surveys have been conducted locally in the past. I think this may be the first national survey, and certainly the results will be interesting. But I think the survey and the debate in general really should prompt a reflection about what the nature of the patronage, or particularly the ethos of a school, is, and how parents view it. Reflecting on the situation here in Letterkenny, for instance, where there is a great variety of educational opportunities and patronage. And I suspect that parents generally choose a school simply because there's a place, rather than giving it a great deal of consideration in terms of the ethos of the school, because there's such pressure for school positions. But the ethos is, I think, and I suppose this is the point for reflection, it's more than about the provision of religious instruction, or indeed even the observance of religious practice within the school, but rather the philosophy that guides the approach to education. And if I may make a short digression, there at the weekend, the Pope declared John Henry Newman, an English saint, to be a doctor of the church. He was actually one of the founders of the Catholic University in Dublin, which was the kind of the root of UCD as we have it today. And he had a great philosophy about education. And his basic point was that education is about the formation of the whole person, body, soul and mind, that it cannot be reduced to merely the provision of technical know-how and ability for life, which obviously is very necessary, but also how we form the person and how we prepare them to enter into life.
But beyond that, though, Monsignor, there is also, though, a sense from some of the people that are texting in to us, and we have had different views, but that this is more of an attack on Christianity in Ireland, Catholicism in Ireland, that you start with the schools, they're trying to get rid of that, and then we just accept that, you know, Christianity could even be a minor religion or an equally practiced religion as many other religions, and people tie what potentially could happen into schools to the broader sort of, cultural aspects of the country. Do you have any sympathy or comment in relation to people that feel like that?
Well, it's a supposition, but I think that, you know, there is a debate there in society, and it's a reasonable debate concerning parents who wish to have their children educated in different environments. And you know, you cannot avoid that debate. And really, I think it should lead people to reflect, if they wish to do so, about what does one intend by education, and if there is a choice for Catholic schooling, for instance, what does that mean? It means more than simply the provision of catechesis or even the environment, shall we say, that might be religious. It's about what do we intend by schooling? What do we intend by education? And if we intend, for those parents who choose it, a Catholic education or an education in a Christian environment, what particular contribution does that make to the formation of the young
finally,
and the approach?
Finally, Monsignor, are you offering any guidance to, as a church leader, to parents or guardians in relation to this?
I would say people should engage with it, like everything else, no more than the recent election. If one doesn't participate, one's voice is not heard. So naturally, it's good to participate in this and to make one's voice heard and so on. It contributes to the debate and it contributes to the reflection that is very much an issue. I think most parents probably go from day to day. They're simply happy. Thank God we have a very high quality of education throughout the school sector in Ireland. We're very fortunate, and it's part of the tradition that I feel the church has also contributed to, that we should be proud of. But I think it's good to reflect on these matters, and it's good to engage parents in a real reflection about what they intend regarding schooling.
Monsignor Kevin Gillespie, thank you very much. And finally to you, David Graham, Communications Officer with Education Equality. I mean, what would you hope the findings of this survey are? I mean, are you encouraging people of a certain mind to make sure that their voices are heard?
I would encourage everybody to participate. I certainly am not in the business of telling parents what their opinions should be. I mean, people, I would agree with the Monsignor just now that parents should absolutely participate in this survey. They should make their voices heard, make their views clear. I would caution, however, that there's likely to be a lot of scaremongering and misinformation over the next number of weeks. And I would ask people to use their critical faculties before coming to a decision. And particularly for those who are Catholic and who are practicing Catholic and for whom their faith is important to them, I would ask them to draw on their own Christian compassion and put themselves in the shoes of children who are not from that background, and teachers indeed who are not Christians and not from that background. And I hope that with a little bit of information, I think the department has promised that there will be objective information provided to parents as part of this survey. And I think when people do complete this survey in the privacy of their own homes, that they will recognise that multi-denominational education is a threat to nobody. The kind of narrative around sort of some sort of destruction of Christianity in Ireland is nonsense.
Yeah, really, I'm not sure how objective the department is going to be, though, because they set it out that this will support a more diverse school provision. So, and you do that by change. So that I would argue the department's already not on the fence on this one, per se.
Well, you could say they're not on the fence in terms of the direction that they want to move education, but if they're providing factual information, facts are facts. Facts aren't subject to opinion. So if the department says a multi-denominational school does X, Y, and Z, I do think you can take it that that's factual. I mean, at the end of the day, moving religious faith formation outside the school day on an opt-in basis will make a relatively small difference for Catholic children, and it'll mean the world to children who are not Catholic. And really, that's it.
All right.
We need an education system that serves everybody.
David Graham, thank you very much indeed. Monsignor Kevin Gillespie, thanks to you again. A caller says, in England, you have to pay to attend a Catholic school. If other religions and none want their own school, it's simple, create them. Another interesting, I'd love to go to some of these Muslim countries and demand a non-Muslim school was made available to me. They may well exist, I'm not really quite sure. Another, under the constitution, the schools and churches are protected. The government doesn't have any legal right to change ethos of the schools. The schools are under the churches, Protestant and Catholic, not state. Keep schools under the churches, not just under the churches, but under morality and for the protection of our national identity. Another, Greg, we want religion in our schools. It's all needed to keep our children safe and to guide them through life. Text in all your views, by the way. Another, if you don't like Catholic schools, don't send your children. But the argument being there needs to be alternatives provided by the state, because as the Monsignor pointed out, often there might not be a choice. Another, it's an absolute fact that both in England and America, Catholic schools are the first choice of parents who are non-Catholic. In London, non-Catholic parents are now declaring their faith as Catholic just to get their children into Catholic schools. In America as well, Catholic schools are the most popular among parents, with pupils having very high academic results. What does that tell us? I'm not quite sure. I'd have to think about it. On the issue of phones in young people's hands, would it be an idea for the government to bring in legislation that no child under 16 should possess a smartphone or tablet? This might take the pressure off parents then. I don't think there's any appetite to do that. I can't see that ever happening. And there's a lot of parents might want phones in their children's hands. You're starting to sort of interfere in parental decision making then. It's not voluntary anymore, it's compulsory. I'm not saying that's right or wrong, I'm just saying there could be a bit of resistance, a bit of pushback. What's next? A caller says, we did a no smartphone in national school vote in our school here in Dublin. Every parent's class group voted to agree to this, apart from a small majority of sixth class parents. This is being rolled out. Great result in our school, which has approximately 900 pupils. That's coming in from Amy from Donegal Town. Interesting, Amy. And I think really where the power of parenting comes is in initiatives like that. I can understand where there's a bit of pushback for sixth class parents, but it'll be interesting to see introduced. And it's right to, isn't it? We have to protect our young people, don't we? Keep your calls and comments coming in relation to that. By the way, if I didn't get to your comment, it's not that it wasn't read or it won't be read out. It literally is a time issue. We just couldn't get to all of them today, but we really appreciate it. And if you're listening, as I said earlier, to the podcast or the overnight repeat, feel free to WhatsApp your message or email your message to comments@highlandradio.com, and we'll pick it up and include it in the next live show, which, if it was tonight, would be tomorrow. And that's when we're going to chat to you again tomorrow morning from 9 o'clock. But for me, Greg Hughes and the team, have a great day.